Welcome to the Science of Reading Leadership Podcast. We are so excited to be here. We are on site at AASA getting to talk to superintendents from all over the country. And today I am with Superintendent Amy Suman. Welcome. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Amy, tell us a little bit more about where you're from, your district. What do you do?
Thank you. I'm very privileged to serve the Pueblo of Laguna, and that is one of 23 sovereign tribes and nations in the state of New Mexico. There are about 400 children in my district, 130 employees, and we serve students from 6 months old in our early Head Start all the way up to our middle school. And then we're also working on some partnerships with our high school community.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. So one of the things that we like to do here is not just talk about teaching the science of reading, but really talking about that leadership lens. And so where are you all in your science of reading journey? Because we know that there's people all over the country in different spots on that continuum. So where are you all?
Yeah, that's great. And thank you for the opportunity to talk about that. So a lot of the work that I do is trying to focus on equity and making sure that our students are getting the services they need for the data to reflect accurately the access that they have. And for example, one of the things that's very challenging is when we're hit with data that will show that, say, 23% of Native American students are not meeting proficiency or deficient in reading. And so it's really important as a leader in this community to drill down on that aggregated data and disaggregate it and say, well, why are our students performing lower? Do we have adequate reading teachers? Well, in many micro districts, especially in tribally controlled schools and BIE schools, we're understaffed just like everyone else is in the nation. But it's even harder to attract teachers to rural locations to serve indigenous communities. So do we have the adequate staff? Then we look at the specialization services. Coming from a reading interventionist background and an English background, we know that our students need a little extra. They need more, and they need specialized services. Trying to fund those specialized services is very challenging. So we do believe deeply in our literacy programs, but it's trying to get those additional services to really get our students up where they need to be. And also meeting them where they are, being very aware of the social determinants. Are our students housed? Are they fed? I come from a state where we are last in child health. We are also last in education and have been for years. We're also home to 23 sovereign tribes and nations. The average public school student in the United States in a state like, say, New Hampshire or New York is funded at about $20,000 per student. And they have high rates of achievement. In New Mexico, our public school students are funded at about $13,000 per student. And if you work for a tribally controlled school or a BIE school, we use an Indian Student Equalization Program metric. Our students are funded at just about $7,000 per student. So when you really look at that and you look at the needs in our community, we're looking at a picture of equity that needs to have an examination lens placed on it in order to get to that place where our students can have the same equitable access to services so that they can achieve.
Wow. Those numbers are staggering to hear. And like you said, before we came on the podcast, you were just talking about you think you might be one of the only superintendents here who's kind of representing the type of community that you're from. And so I think it's really important for our listeners to be able to have that opportunity to hear. So thank you. What do you feel like are the strengths that you have already achieved within your district in terms of literacy achievement?
Great question. So we're really excited that we've just looked at some of our benchmark data and our mid-year assessment for the NWEA MAP, the measure of academic proficiency, has showed some linear growth, which is great. But again, wanting to disaggregate that data, the tribes and nations were locked down for an additional 9 months beyond the beyond the national order. And that was because of the there was so much death on the reservations due to, multi-aging housing, again, not clean drinking water, substandard home in many cases. And so our students are coming out of COVID 9 months later after everybody else. And we all know what COVID did. Now, if you live in a state that only has 76% digital connectivity, as opposed to 97% in Vermont, our students weren't able to learn remotely, many of them, especially on our reservation lands. So coming back and trying to make up those learning losses has been a challenge, but luckily we have incredible teachers who are so dedicated. Another strength that we have is we have tight-knit communities, and it's really beautiful to see the multi-generational impact that our elders have on our youngest. And I think that that's definitely something that's an advantage and that you don't see in a lot of communities.
Wow. I think you're right about that. Have you done anything in terms of parent partnerships or, you know, family and community partnerships in terms of literacy?
Yes, ma'am. We've hosted some reading nights. We have a program whereby our fifth graders are reading to our kindergartners so that we can create those bonds. We're hoping to start a foster grandparent program where we can involve our elders more as the beacons of wisdom in our community. There seems to be a pervasive idea in the United States that our seniors need help, but our seniors are actually the keepers of so much wisdom.
Yes.
And
yes.
So rather than having our children do service projects for our seniors, we're bringing our seniors in to help us teach our children.
Love that.
Which is really amazing. And it's really an awesome cultural initiative. So, and the other thing is our language, this Karis, which is the Laguna language. It's a spoken language, not a written language. So it's really important that while we're focusing on our literacy and our scores, we're also revitalizing the Karis language.
This episode is brought to you by Just Right Reader. From pre-emergent through developing readers, Just Right Reader supports every student's full journey to confident, independent reading in English and Spanish. Following a rigorous phonics progression, Just Right Reader decodables provide the structured phonics practice in English or Spanish that leads to reading success. To learn more, visit justrightreader.com.
Do most of your students speak Karis, or do they come not having that background of that language?
That's a really great question. If you have had the advantage of a parent who or a grandparent who lives with you and speaks the language, the children pick it up much quicker. But as we know from the Indian school era, a lot of linguicide occurred, and so children weren't able to be exposed to their language. So we work very hard with the Office of Laguna Learning and our tribal council and our elders to infuse language and culture into our program so that our students will have that advantage of being able to be as close to bilingual as we can to keep the language going. But your answer to that, the short answer is no, most of our students are not fluent, and we're hoping to create more fluency among them.
I would love to know more about what that actually looks like from a logistical standpoint of helping to revitalize that language. Because so often when we talk about second languages or bilingual students in our schools, we're talking about students typically maybe coming from another country and they don't yet speak English, but this is an entirely different approach to bilingualism. So what does that really look like to be trying to revitalize that language?
It's a challenge in the sense that it is a language that is also protected. And so we have to use a lot of mechanisms in place in order to achieve the approval from our tribal elders and our tribal council and our tribal government in order to roll out the language in a way that is both sensitive and appropriate. So it is a challenge, but we do have an incredible team of young folks, the Office of Laguna Learning, that works to interface with our tribal council, with our students, so that we can get that language and culture back. They've also created a number of materials, books, coloring books, bingo, to help children learn their language, which is really exciting. They've started an after-school program, and they have just been working for the last several years on trying to create a website. So only our tribal members will be able to log into the website, and they actually have recorded our tribal elders speaking speaking the language.
Oh, wow.
So the children can learn from hearing. So it's really exciting to see how they're using technology and also accessing the wisdom of our elders.
What a dichotomy of the old and the new,
right?
And bringing so cool. all of those pieces together. In terms of professional development for your teachers, I'm assuming that because your community is really close-knit, I'm also assuming that your school community is probably very close-knit. What has professional development looked like in terms of the science of reading or literacy initiatives? How has that changed over the past maybe couple of years?
Yeah, well, it's always difficult to decide what is the best kind of professional development for your teachers, because the first thing you've got to do is kind of do that qualitative listening. What do they need? What do they want? So one of the things that we found is that they wanted more individual coaching. And so we hired an instructional coach. And that's been wonderful because we've been able to have an outside set of eyes looking into our teachers, and they're able to go to that teacher for some resources. So that's kind of exciting. Of course, we're always trying to work on some trauma-informed Right. responses. As you know, many children in the United States suffer from adverse childhood experiences, the ACEs score. And 0 to 3 is considered about normal, but in our state, we double the national average of ACEs. And so it's really important when you look at it through that lens of learning. The current brain research shows that children who have been traumatized or survived trauma, their brains mimic the brain scans in many ways of children who have learning disabilities or traumatic brain injury. And so both of those factors play into a child's ability to learn. So we're really sensitive about the educational psychology piece of how do our children learn best, and creating those safe and inviting and accepting spaces for them to create the bottom of Maslow's pyramid.
Yes.
So that they can head all the way up to the top where they deserve to be.
Really seems like you all and your school community have just a very holistic approach to serving the children in your community. My one last question that I'm really interested in, because I don't think that you mentioned, do you really start serving students at 6 months old? Is that what you said?
The early head start program. Yeah,
okay.
We do. And it's beautiful because, if you go in and visit, as I often do,
yeah.
I treat myself on Fridays by going to see the babies.
That's got to be a good end of the week pick-me-up.
It's the best thing in the world. And these babies are swaddled on the floor, and their backs are being patted to the sound of the drum.
Oh,
and something
wow.
that's really magical is the children, even if they're fussy, once the drums begin, they all immediately get quiet because it's mother's heartbeat. And so I really love that we're trying from our youngest to build the language back up with demonstrations
wow.
and how to, you know, we read to them the winter stories, we sing to them, and they're able to start getting the language much earlier. And it's very exciting to see.
The spoken language, I mean, that is the foundation of future literacy, right? So, okay, so what we do at the very end of every podcast is we always ask our superintendents. You all have a lot on your plates. You have a lot of stakeholders. You have a lot of policy and legislation that you're always, you know, working through. But if you had to give one piece of advice to other superintendents who maybe are in a district like yours, maybe not, to help them accelerate reading achievement, what would that one piece of advice be?
That's tough. But after attending some of these sessions, my biggest piece of advice would be look for the root cause analysis. Address the social determinants, stop referring to children as at risk and refer to them as at promise, and really look and see if you're providing equitable supports for all children to achieve. And that's what I would ask.
Wow.
Please. Thank you.
Amy, thank you so much. That last line gave me chills. So thank you so much. I think that you brought such a unique perspective to our listeners, and I think we all learned a lot today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks for joining us. If you found this conversation valuable, please subscribe and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. We will see you next time on Science of Reading Leadership, Guiding Minds, Transforming Lives.